types of products that we think that Massachusetts needs and could be made here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Welcome to MassMEP's Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. MassMEP believes that there's some element to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding inefficiencies, strengthening internal processes, or unlocking growth, that can extend the firm beyond its current limitations.
Welcome to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. I'm your host, Haley Steele, Marketing Coordinator with MassMEP. Our podcast today is titled COVID-19, Sea Change in Progress. Not necessarily the sea that you may be thinking, like you do with your eyes, but as in the sea, S-E-A. Sea Change in Progress. It's defined as a profound or notable transformation. And COVID-19 sure fits that bill. With our panelists today, we are going to see if we can navigate some of the choppy waters. So I'd like to welcome our panelists. We have a first-time panelist with us, Kathy Mahoney, the Center Director of MassMEP. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We have John Killam, who is President of MassMEP. And I think, John, this is your third visit with us.
I think so.
Welcome. Yeah.
Hi, Haley.
And our special guest today, we have State Representative Jeff Roy of Massachusetts 10th Norfolk District. Welcome, Rep. Roy.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. I think I got your district right. I was a little worried earlier today. I wanted to make sure I pronounced it all the correct way.
10th Norfolk was pretty good.
All right.
For those who don't know what 10th Norfolk stands for, it's Franklin and Medway.
There you go. Okay, so that's good for me because obviously I'm not from here, so I had to make sure I pronounced Norfolk the right way. So welcome everyone for joining us, and thank you all for taking time out of your day so that you can help us see change in progress. And this podcast actually came about because of an email that was sent to us two podcasts ago from a client that we work with. And it generated some ideas that let's do a podcast with our manufacturers. And then we started to bring up all these discussions. And so this is why we're here today. And it's an opportunity for us to ask you all what it looks like right now in manufacturing and in the state of Massachusetts. So I know the Advanced Manufacturing Collaborative, it's been a part of the mass manufacturing ecosystem for a while now. And I know we have the MERT, which is the Massachusetts Manufacturing Emergency Response Team. So can you guys give us a little bit of background on the Advanced Manufacturing Collaborative and the role that it has these days during COVID-19? And are the AMC and the MERT aligned in some way?
Well, I can start if you want.
Perfect.
MERT, which is the Manufacturing Emergency Response Team, is comprised of mainly members of the Advanced Manufacturing Collaborative, of which Chairman Roy is a member and a standing member for a while, as I am also.
Yeah, I know the Advanced Manufacturing Collaborative was established probably 6 or 7 years ago as part of an economic development piece of legislation, and it was to promote manufacturing and try to position Massachusetts to be number one in the nation in manufacturing. And it's a collaboration of government folks, industry folks. Proud to see John Killam on there. He's been on there since the beginning. And it's got some of the folks from the administration in Massachusetts government. And we all get together to talk and strategize about ways to make Massachusetts great in the area of manufacturing.
So then today now with COVID-19 and how it's come about, unfortunately, are they aligned in any ways? Do they kind of match up at all, or are they kind of just both in existence and on own separate entities?
I think the formation of the Advanced Manufacturing Collaborative, it was imperative to that was in place to form the manufacturing emergency response team. Before the collaborative, there was no collection of resources like we have today, in an organized way. The state was able to really access this team and put feet on the ground working with manufacturers right away through the emergency response team.
Yeah, so it set the tone as to we've done this before and this is a great collaborative in how it works.
We knew the landscape. We know the players. We had a number of the large companies on the team. And so we had a lot of influencers that were, you know, ready to make things happen. I hope at some point during our conversation today, we can talk about some of the companies that did pivot as a result of this.
Absolutely. Yeah. So as we start to look at reopening the economy, and obviously, from what we understand, there's going to be phases. Can you guys give us an idea of what manufacturers are concerned about right now? I'm going to guess there's probably a whole range of issues: employees, business flow, supply chain, government assistance, and communications. But just if you could each, touch on what you're hearing and what the manufacturers that you know are concerned about moving forward.
I think I'll jump in and talk about an issue that has been a concern for manufacturers even before COVID-19. And I think it was highlighted by what's happening with COVID-19, and that's workforce development. And I think that has been a major thrust of the energy we've put into is that we have so many manufacturing jobs available in Massachusetts, but we don't have trained people to go into these professions. And in Massachusetts, generally, 72% of the jobs require some sort of a credential beyond a high school diploma. And that's certainly the case in manufacturing. And, delighted that Mass MEP has been a leader in developing a curriculum for young people and people who are underemployed to gather credentialing and leveling to enter into the manufacturing field. But in all the visits that I go and all the manufacturers that I've seen, they've all stressed the need to provide better trained and better skilled workers. And that was something that happened before COVID-19, and it's been re-emphasized today.
I'm in 100% agreement. It's before the pandemic, there was a shortage of skilled workers. Post-pandemic, I believe there'll be a higher demand for manufacturing around what we were already doing. But I also think we're going to add to our demand the critical supply of PPE and other things like that. So the need for skilled employees will be first and foremost, I think, after the pandemic, as it was before the pandemic. And thank you, Rep. Roy, because we do have programming and we do have resources to skill people up and to help them onboard into manufacturing companies.
Yeah, and so Kathy, I know that you put forward a survey and asked questions. Was any of this part of the survey that you had asked, and what kind of responses did you get from that?
So what we heard is there's a concern for the workforce. Obviously, having enough skilled workforce to fill the jobs that they need, but also the nervousness of their current employees getting infected, the fear of the employees returning to work or missing work. So the workforce is a critical component of any company, in particular manufacturing, because of the skill set required. So companies want to make sure that they maintain the health and safety of their employees. And that's a post COVID-19 issue. Obviously, the numbers before were, like both Rep. Roy and John have said, was a concern. So now it's just even increased exponentially because now there's also the fear. There's also, there's been reports out that people won't return back to work for various reasons: daycare, transportation, they're close to retirement, so they may retire a few years early. So the workforce is just escalated even greater as a concern for the companies. So there's the concern of the workforce. That's the first priority, making sure that there's safety and making sure that there's enough employees to be able to work in the company. But they're also concerned about their supply chain, not just their company, but, you know, is the company gonna, their current suppliers, are they gonna be open again in 6 months? The survey that we did, about 40% said that they've seen a reduction of some percentage in their business, but none of them said that they plan on closing, which I thought was fantastic, so.
That's great. So I'm going to kind of go when we got into the workforce and the employees, and you touched on it a little bit, Kathy, and saying like the fear, and I'm not really sure. I don't know if there's any training out there for employers to learn how to handle fear, you know, in a situation like this, because we've never experienced this before. But are there other things? Are you hearing things from manufacturers about what they might be implementing as we phase back into the return, you know, returning this work process?
I've got a real life example that just started about a week ago. The travel restrictions has affected companies that are multinational companies. We have a company here in Massachusetts that had just before the shutdown had planned to open a facility in Japan. And so this facility would end up supplementing the Massachusetts facility, and it was all about growth. But obviously the plans had to stall out because nobody could go to Japan to put the equipment in place, and the people from Japan couldn't come to Massachusetts. So what this company decided to do was create a way to communicate the setup and the operation of the equipment and translate the language into Japanese. And so we're going to take on an initiative with them to simplify the instruction piece using some methodologies that we're aware of called TWI. And we'll help the organization still meet their deadline of June 15th to be able to instruct the Japanese facility to get up to speed and producing product. But that example, I think, is going to exist for a while, where manufacturers either don't want to or won't be able to travel out of the country to do business, to do commerce. It shouldn't stop business, but it's, again, the new normal that we'll be talking about, where just what we're doing today, where we're talking on video, business will be done very differently and probably using some of the same format. But travel, the communication piece, everything's going to be done differently. And I think there's things that even manufacturers don't know, and we don't know what they will be affected by or how they'll be affected.
Repro, do you want to talk about the company in Franklin that's opening up due to the COVID-19?
Sure. You know, I think it highlights one of the overall concerns that we learned about in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and that is the lack of manufacturers of personal protective equipment right here in Massachusetts. And we saw that we were having to rely upon other countries and other states for supply chain issues in getting this PPE here. So I think one of the immediate issues that we did was to try to identify manufacturers who could actually pivot and create PPE. And one of those companies that we worked with, and I'm grateful to the folks at MassMEP for lending their expertise in helping us get this company up and running. But we had an old factory in downtown Franklin that used to do upholstery for automobiles. And that factory had closed in 2016. So it was sitting empty and vacant for several years. And one of the engineers who worked at that company several years ago reached out and said, I know the machines in that building, and a couple of them happen to be cutters, and they would be perfect for manufacturing gowns for use in hospitals and healthcare facilities. And, you know, can you put me in touch with the owners of the building and some other folks so that we can get that equipment up and running? And, you know, I'm happy to report that initial call came on March 30th. And because of all the resources that are available here in Massachusetts, they're doing test runs today and expect to be doing full production of these medical gowns within a week. And that's just an incredible turnaround, but it's a story that is really attributable to the number of resources that we have here in Massachusetts. And I'm sure John can fill you in on those nitty-gritty details about how you know, MassMEP got involved and the introductions and communications that they had to hook up this manufacturer.
There's so many elements to this story that are really great. To finish up on what you said, just us understanding the ecosystem and the resources that are available because of the different committees and teams that are formed within the state really allowed us to access the critical resources to get this company off the ground. But look at the equipment that you're using. The equipment is probably close to 100 years old.
Right.
They did it right. They made simple changes. The investments weren't too heavy or too big, and they were able to produce very, very quickly. This is, for manufacturers to produce at this speed, a new product is just unheard of. But I think it speaks to the tenacity of that company, as well as the resources and the leadership that Jim and Roy provided through that process.
You know, one of the things I can add on to that is we, 5 or 6 years ago, Speaker DeLeo came up with the idea we ought to have a manufacturing caucus in the legislature. And mm-hmm. a caucus is a group of legislators who are interested in certain topics. And we started a manufacturing caucus, and immediately we got 60 members out of 200 legislators who stepped forward and expressed an interest in doing that. That has helped us to create some policies, some budget line items, and appropriations that put the resources together. And you know, many of my legislative colleagues have gotten together to have manufacturing roundtables throughout the state where they would bring government folks together with industry folks to have conversations. And the striking thing to me in participating in these conferences and these roundtables was watching people sitting around a table and learning what resources were out there. Many of the companies had no idea that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts had so many robust resources. So if anything else, it identified ways that companies could get assistance to get their companies up to speed and doing modern manufacturing. And that, to me, is one of the keys of the Advanced Manufacturing Collaborative, is that there's a great deal of sharing of resources. So when I heard from the folks, I knew who to call right away. And, you know, all of these relationships and these connections that are out there really served us well. And as John said, taking a concept and an idea and bringing it to production in such a short period of time was incredible.
So usually we would talk about pivoting. And in this case, it really wasn't a pivot. It was a company that was gone out of, you know, had stopped doing business and came back to life almost and really got its pulse on it. But there are a lot of other companies I know that we at MassMEP, and John, you can probably fill in on this, that have done some pivoting and that have made some adjustments. So can you fill us in on some of those companies that you have worked with and MassMEP has as well?
The term pivot is really interesting in that it, from day one, it took hold, and I hear it applied almost every environment that I'm in. If you're in the industry, if you're from manufacturing and you want to make that type of change, you retool. You do things. It's very engineering and mechanical oriented. Pivoting makes it all sound so easy. There are companies like we heard about Merrow. They've been in the news a lot, Merrow Manufacturing. We spoke to Merrow, and very interesting study in that his business is the textile industry, but he wasn't making gowns. He was making other products. But he was able to change over his tooling so that he was able to make gowns, and he did it pretty quickly. But when you talk to Charlie Merrow, what he tells you is he didn't do this in 2 weeks or 3 weeks after COVID-19. He started 3 years ago putting a process in place that drove them to be more nimble, right? They wanted agility and speed so that they could make these type of changes. But there are other companies. 99 Degrees was in the news a lot. They were more of a pivot probably than in the traditional sense that we hear than other companies. But it's not about the pivot, even though that's the key term that everyone's using. What I'm so impressed with is the tenacity that the state went after finding folks here in Massachusetts that could make these products. And the number of manufacturers that raised their hand and said, hey, we want to be a part of this. We want to help. We saw companies like Flexcon who made face shields. And they were so early in the process, there was nobody to accept the face shields. Mm-hmm. The state hadn't set up the procurement system. There was no MERT. So what did Flexcon do? They went around their own community. They brought them to hospitals. They brought them to the fire rescue and police. So we've seen examples of that every week since this has happened. So it's really been amazing to watch people step up in manufacturing and really try to do something to help out.
There's a lot of bad going on in this COVID-19, and I've heard a lot of sad stories. Mm-hmm. But when I think of manufacturing and I think of what has happened over the past couple of weeks, if there is a bright spot in the COVID-19 is that we have identified some of the issues that we need to work on. We marshaled the resources, and I think manufacturing is going to come out very strong at the end of this period.
I agree.
Yeah, I think, you know, and when you talk about, and you talk about Merrill, and we talk about this in different webinars that we've put on. We've done some agile and we did an agile webinar, and in speaking to that the presenter from that, she made a statement and said that she has seen that a lot of companies have been able to quickly adjust because of they work in an agile environment. And then as you talk about it more, and then you see the discussions like with Charlie Merrow from Merrow Manufacturing, and, you know, is it a culture, or what is it that, you know, are you seeing that's helping some of these? And you kind of touched on that a little bit, John, in saying that, you know, the willingness, and then they're behind that, as we've talked to some of our other manufacturers, the pride of their employees knowing that they're doing something and they're actually contributing to what's happening today. And it's coming out of what they just took as, I go to my job every single day and I do my job and I leave and I go home and I provide for my family. But now I'm doing so much more. I'm reaching so much farther, and they're seeing that. So do you, I know it's, you can't really, are there any recommendations or I guess positive thoughts that you could put out there for some of these possible manufacturers that maybe haven't had quite this opportunity yet? And will there be maybe some other opportunities that may come from this for other types of manufacturers that haven't tapped into this yet?
So that's a great question. The survey that we sent out to the companies about a couple weeks ago, one of the questions that we asked was, what are the silver linings that they've experienced from this COVID-19 pandemic. And a bunch of the companies said that they are doing maintenance now on equipment that they previously weren't able to do, that they are planning, doing their strategic planning, they're looking at new markets. I think companies are kind of taking a step back and evaluating where they are and what they can do during this downturn and turn in the economy. We also had one company that said that their sales have increased 10%, 10 times. So they're clearly in a medical device or a PPE supply chain. The other thing is that MassMEP, if you had looked at what we are doing on March 1st, we were a company that everyone was in the office. We were all delivering face-to-face services to our clients. Within a couple of weeks, everyone went virtual and we all adjusted to working from home, just like our client companies are doing. And so we're all trying to take a step back and figure out what this new normal is going to be and going forward. And I think that on the other side of this, we're going to be looking at, you know, additional virtual trainings that we can provide for our clients, as well as, you know, what can we do from home and working remotely?
Yeah.
We had a meeting yesterday with the legislature and folks from MassMEP, and the Speaker of the House was on the call with us. And at the end of the conversation, he asked us to put together a list of those types of products that we think that Massachusetts needs mm-hmm. and could be made here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And he's got the energy and enthusiasm to continue building on the great things we've done already, because he wants Massachusetts to be number one in every single area, and manufacturing is something that's a passion of his. So we're gonna get that list together. And in the same meeting, we learned that Pfizer is doing human trials for a vaccine for COVID-19, and if those trials are successful, they will do their manufacturing of the vaccine right here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We have an ecosystem for biopharmaceuticals that's the top of the chart, and we have the capabilities to do it. We have the infrastructure, and we have the knowledge base. We have some of the greatest innovators at MIT, Worcester Polytech, UMass Lowell. We just have an incredible system to get these products from an idea into production, and it's a very exciting time period.
Yeah, that's awesome.
When we come out of this, Haley, the demand for PPE products will not go away. And one of the things, and Chairman Roy referenced this a second ago, one of the things that MassMEP hopes to do is be a part of the bigger picture in that we're able to work with the legislature, the administration, and define a supply chain that the state can count on to produce at least PPE, medical PPE, for situations like this in the future. But what Rep. Roy was just referring to was, what are those other products or items that will be strategic needs in the future? And how will Massachusetts be prepared to address that? And I think together we'll be able to determine what the ecosystem is, what the strength of that ecosystem is, and how to deploy within that ecosystem. The one thing I have heard a lot of is there's an appetite for people to have the state or the federal government put programs in place, not to subsidize necessarily, but to provide money for capital to continue to pivot their organizations or be prepared to work in an environment where they can make a strategic critical component.
Yeah,
the point is there's going to be real upside in terms of production demand.
Yeah, so, and I think, obviously, it's very unknown territory that we're in now and that we're going to be moving to in the future, but that's definitely one of the big questions, John, that you just answered. And if we do have a second wave that hits us, you know, what are some of the things that we should be considering for the future in mass? And these opportunities are hopefully, you know, this is going to open things up, and people are going to have to, you know, I think it's hard to change a perspective in your daily, you know, day to day, this is what I do. But unfortunately, in a situation like this, and Kathy referred to the word, another buzzword is the silver linings and finding another way. And we've talked about it before, you know, touching on, it's hard to, as a company, sit and look at yourself and say, if something were to happen, say in 3 years' time, and I would not become an essential anymore, how could I make sure that wouldn't happen? Because who would have thought in today that, you know, people in a grocery store, there are frontline workers and there are essentials. So definitely being able to find ways to look at this in a different perspective and knowing there's possibilities, there's support out there for you to help you do pivoting or transitioning or adapting, however you want to see it. It's available, and knowing where to go and find it. So, you know, we talk about, is there a way that we can support the legislatures in this and to be successful when we return to work and the reopening of the economy?
Well, I'll tell you this, you know, being able to reach out and have these resources and working together with these groups is a tremendous asset. And I think it really, this period of time has solidified the need for us to have these relationships. And I know they'll only get stronger as we move forward. And I should let you know, today was a very historic moment for the Massachusetts legislature, because for the first time in the history of Massachusetts, we voted remotely on a bill to allow the state to borrow money in the, you know, given that the tax deadline was moved from April 15th to July 15th. So my ask to the manufacturing industry, there were a few technical glitches that happened. So could you come up with a method for us to have the technology so that we won't have these glitches moving forward? How's that?
Oh, well, and it's funny that you say that, because obviously it's an election year for the state representative. So how is COVID-19 affecting the election process, or how do you think it may have an impact on it?
Well, it's certainly going to change completely the way candidates campaign.
Yeah.
Particularly in the state legislature. If you're running for state representative or you're running for state senator, key to your success is outreach to your voters. And typically the best way to outreach to your voters is to actually go and knock on their door. Well, I can guess that no candidate is going to go out and knock on anyone's door anytime soon. So you're going to have to take advantage of the technology, the Zoom meetings, you know, Facebook Live, any other way to communicate, because it's going to be incredibly different. There's not going to be much shaking of hands over the next couple of months. You know, there aren't going to be large rallies and gatherings over the next couple of months. So, you know, I'm anxious to see who's going to be the most creative in coming up with a way to reach voters, because people want to hear from you. They want to see you. You know, they used to want to touch you, but, you know, not anymore. But it's, you know, even something as simple as gathering signatures to get on the ballot. That was an incredible discussion, because a statewide office holder has to get 10,000 signatures. Who's going to be able to get 10,000 signatures in this climate? So the Supreme Judicial Court stepped in and cut all of those requirements in half. So a lot of changes, even elections. We're debating these days whether we're going to have mail-in voting or no-fault absentee voting. You hit on a perfect question as to what's going to happen over the next couple months. So put your seatbelt on. It's going to be a rough ride, but we'll all get there safely.
I'm pretty sure you can probably ask all those hairdressers out there how they got 10,000 signatures for the petition so that they could open salons back up.
Hey, look, I had to give myself right? a haircut a couple of weeks ago. It was getting so unruly. I just took the clippers and did it. My wife said, you didn't do so bad a job, but
yeah.
I'm looking forward to getting back in the chair.
Me too. So you talking about this, I'm going to ask you a question, all three of you. I kind of want to see your views on this. I have children and they range in ages from fifth grade to a senior. And I've always said, my husband and I have both have always said, you know, this technology and it's going to kill your generation and it's putting a gap in and there's no connections anymore. And do you all still, and you may not have had that thought as I did before, I know mine has changed, but what are your thoughts on this? Like, do you think that this is actually possibly bringing us closer together? We're spending time with different people than we did before, and we may be seeing different groups, or what are each of your thoughts on that? What do you think about it?
I'll let you guys go first.
First, I have a senior in high school, and I'm with Haley. If you had asked me 6 months ago, I'm like, oh, she can't get her face out of the phone. She, you know, they don't have any. I always called it that gut reaction to people going forward. Yeah. I think the technology has kept her sane these last few weeks because, you know, she's a senior. They're missing out on all that stuff. They do the Zoom calls, they do the classes, they do the talking through that piece of it. So I think it's kept her sane and connected. I know professionally, you know, we're doing the Zoom calls with people that aren't typically in the office. So I may not talk to them in the course of a week, but we are having Zoom calls twice a week with the project managers and just trying to keep everyone in touch. So I think technology has helped us stay connected. Does it replace the face-to-face? No. But I think that it's helped through this whole transition.
I'm grateful for the technology, grateful that we have the ability to do this. Yeah. But I can tell you, I certainly miss the face-to-face meetings. I miss the camaraderie of being with my colleagues in the chamber and in the hallways. There's so much that you miss that I think we all took for granted. It's a great lesson in not taking stuff for granted. I'm about zoomed out, I will say that. But,
I think we all are.
Yeah. And I'm working harder now than I ever did because, you know, I used to be able to drive from meeting to meeting and get in my car and chill for about 15 minutes or a half hour as I was going from meeting to meeting. But nowadays, you go from Zoom call to Zoom call to Zoom call, and your calendar gets filled up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Haley, I really haven't given much thought to it. You know, this will be, I'm sure, a real social study, you know, years from now when... When we all look back, it's unbelievably sad, you know, what's happening. I'm of the mind that, you know, I've got it a lot better than many others, so I'm just going to suck it up and make the most of it. But it's, I'm not sure whether technology's been better or worse. I'm like Kathy and Chairman Roy. I miss, the seeing people. Working with people.
I can say, having heard so many sad stories that I've heard during this, a simple hug is what some people just need, and it's not something that you can give. A pat on the back, being there for them and embracing somebody is so necessary at many moments. The inability to do that has been, I would say, heartbreaking.
Yeah. It's just, it's one of those things, again, it's obviously this whole situation has put us into different perspectives. I never would have in my life thought of something like this and how to handle it and to see it. And it's amazing how you can learn things a lot about yourself going through these type of situations, about the people that you work with, and obviously your families, because we're all in much closer quarters now than we've ever been before. But I'm fortunate, like John said, I'm very lucky. I can still continue to do this every single day and love what I do, and have a great support system behind me with the people that I work with. So it's pretty awesome to have this opportunity. Thank you, Kathy, John, and Rep Roy for joining us today and helping us find ways to navigate through these choppy waters as we see change and progress. As we transition into the phases of returning to work, MassMEP has created a 5-part webinar series titled ABCs of Returning Safely Back to Work that is presented by safety trainers. The series will begin May 15th, and each webinar is approximately 30 minutes to 1 hour. You can visit our website at massmep.org for more information and to get registered.
Thank you so much for listening to MassMEP's Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. To listen to more of MassMEP's podcasts or for more information on how MassMEP, your resource for manufacturing greatness, can help you, please visit massmep.org.